As a homeowner, I can't help myself. I'm always thinking about fixing this and changing that. For the money, for the beauty, for the knowledge and the peace of mind. It's about time for the Love My Renovation Project with Mike Young.
Renovation projects, buying a house, refinance your house, and get the money to fix it up, all in one low-interest loan, one closing. I hear people all the time saying, hey, why don't I just buy the house and then turn around and I'll take some money out of the bank, maybe on a second loan or something like that. Well, you got points, V's, why have them twice? We can finance that under the FHA 203K, the Home Style, or even the VA renovation project product. Oh. Well, we don't love every renovation project by any stretch of the imagination. It can be a very taxing process. So when you get ready to get into a renovation, it's best to have somebody on your side that's knowledgeable and can get this done for you. Today, we're broadcasting from Redding, California. Last week, we was Gray Eagle, California. And next week, if everything goes as planned, we'll be in our Reno offices and broadcasting from Reno. If you have a problem renovation project, maybe you're already into something that you thought was going to be smooth and it's just not running as smoothly as you thought, contractors not showing up on time, maybe not at all. Whatever the problem might be, feel free to call us and we'll talk about it. If you don't mind talking about it on live radio, then you can check with us at 203k911.com, where we've helped over 400 people and all but three of them for absolutely no fee whatsoever. Those three, there was a fee. Two of those three, we were able to get the lender to go in and redo the entire project at the lender's cost. So we have a feeling that we do know a little bit about what we're doing, and it's nice for you to have somebody on your side of the table that knows what they're doing with this programs as well. So if you want to be part of the show today, feel free to call us at 888-627-6008, and we look forward to hearing from you. Anyway, I had an interesting call last week from a longtime client, someone who hires me for their clients all the time. This is a lender, a loan officer that was doing work on her own house. And they were calling and asked me if I had a list of contractors in the area of their new home. Well, frankly, I don't like to give you a list of my contractors, because if I've got some good ones and you start using them all the time, I don't know when they're busy and when they're not busy. But by me keeping that to myself, I have a ready pool of qualified contractors. But when an old friend calls and says, hey, I need a list of contractors, I'm trying to figure out what's going on. So I ask why they needed a list of contractors. And they say, well, for 2 months, we've been trying to get a contractor to bid our project. 2 full months. Every one of them is busy in Napa, California, due to all those fires. Well, frankly, that question surprised me, as they know what it is I do. Bid jobs. That's what we do for a living. They knew it, and yet, when I expressed that sentiment, I was told, it isn't for a loan. We're paying for this project renovation out of our pocket, out of our own funds. Well, does that matter? If I save you anywhere from 3 to 5 times my fee by giving you advanced knowledge, doing it fast, am I really costing you? Does it matter that you're paying for it out of your pocket or if you're getting a bank loan? No, not every 203K or renovation project requires a consultation, but it's always recommended. If you're doing a construction loan and you've got the money to do it yourself, as many investors do, then frankly, you're a fool if you don't get a professional on your side that knows what they're doing. Now, some of the investors I've run into over the years call themselves investors, but in fact, I don't always think so. And the reason I don't is because they're not investing anything. They're buying a property, fixing it up with their own money, and selling it. There's no investment really required. It's nothing at risk. I mean, it's pretty easy to pay for a property outright and then just pay to have it fixed and then flip it, turn around and sell it. But what if you put a little thing at risk? If they would just get a renovation loan, they would then be able to do 5 or 6, maybe 10 projects with the same money and during the same period of time. That is an investor, in my opinion. But let's get back to my friend. I was shocked when they called us and they hadn't had a bid when they know that I provide bids in 5 days for them all day, every day. They would have been 2 months ahead of the game had they called us out and got that bid ahead of time. Well, what they thought, as so many do, is why should we pay a consultant? Why don't we just go out and get contractor bids? Well, number one is we bid the job in 5 days or less, and many times. Once in a while, it might take 6 days, but for the most part, if you give us 5 days to prepare a bid, you won't ever have to call and say, how's it going? Which I hate to have calls like that anyway. So that's the whole idea in asking you for 5 days to put the bid together, is to keep those how you doing calls to a minimum. They are distracting and disruptive to the process. Like I say, I think on the last show we talked about growing up in my family, my dad was a contractor. So the only fun we had was jumping on him when he had a blueprint out there on the floor in front of him. And he would wrestle us down and get us doing takeoffs for him. At the age of 10 and 12, I was doing takeoffs on heating and air conditioning ductwork and sizing furnaces for the house and so forth, and heating and air conditioning. So why not hire somebody on your side that knows how to get a contractor's bid? He has a list of contractors that do work for him. I mean, that's just common sense to me, but not so much to everybody. So they wondered, why should we pay a consultant? Well, I keep going back to that old story where we bid a job, we give you a fair price. This is a bid that will fly. Where do we get our numbers? How do we know that bid is a fair price? Well, FHA consultants are under the guideline that we should be using home tech services. But you can buy a home tech book and put a bid together yourself. Why do you need a contractor at all? The book's pretty easy to use, so just go online to home tech services, pay your $149 for the manual, and price your own project. Whoa, it's done by zip code. So wherever you are in the country, you should be able to get a valid, fair bid price for your project. Doesn't mean a local contractor can't beat it. They might be able to, but it gives you a good grounding, a good start for your project. Okay. So once you have that in your hand, now you go out to bid. So when your contractor bids, you know, lower than you, you're thinking, wow, what did he miss? If he bids a lot higher than you, he's just trying to catch you off guard and see if he or she can make a little more money on your project, because they're busy. And that's the fact. When we get busy, we bid higher. We did higher because we want to make a little more money and because now's the time. And in Napa, close to where this friend of mine was doing their home, Napa houses burned. We lost 3,400 or 3,500 structures. Many of them were homes, and they've got to be put back. And that means, what do you see happening in the marketplace? You see prices of materials are going sky high. Prices of labor is going sky high because everybody's busy. And to get anybody, you have to pay them more than the other guy that was paying them. Okay. We were asked once to do a consultation and put a bid together for to install a new foundation under this client's 100-year-old plus home and to create a partial second story. We had bid $159,000 plus contingency. That contingency is something you borrowed to just in case we run into a problem. It has a minimum of 10%, which is $15,900 in this case, and a maximum of 20%. So when I deal with older homes like this, when they're in excess of 100 years old and never had a foundation under them, we like to go to the 20% just in case. Chances are when you pull that roof away or pull the siding away, you're going to run into some dry rot. After 100 years, it's likely. Another thing we've run into in the past, not on this particular one, is pull the siding or the drywall apart and found out that we had 48-inch centers on the studs, and today's requirement is 16-inch centers. On another house, we pulled the drywall away to expose pallets. The entire structure of the house was pallets. It's the strangest thing I ever saw. Anyway, so we bid $159,000 on this job, and we did it all in 5 days. What happens 5 days or 2 months? What can happen in that time period? Well, prices can go up. Things change. People get busy. They don't have time for your project any longer. So in 5 days, you've got your number, and if it's a good number, you can plan while you get those other bids in. You can plan and find out if it's got a decent bid, if you can get a bid from another contractor or a contractor that supports our bid. You're way ahead of the game. In this case, my friend had been waiting 2 months. She could have had that price, or they could have had that price from me 5 days and saved them 2 months of waiting. We also could have put it out to bid to several contractors that we know. And we did give her a contractor that we think is going to get the job done for her. But it would have been nice if we'd been out there, give her that bid 2 months ago, and with that information in hand, she knows whether she can go ahead with the project as an entire project or if she's got to cut it back and do it in segments. Hey, let's do the kitchen and the bathrooms right now, and then we'll come back and we'll do the exterior siding and the roofing next year. But it gives you that peace of mind of knowing that your project is a viable project the way you wanted to do it, or if you need to scale it back and do it in phases. Well, as the story goes on this $159,000 project, a client told us not to go out and get any bids from anybody, which I told her. I said, it doesn't hurt to have other bids. I think you need to have yourself backed up. You need to have something just in case. She says, no problem. I finally agreed that we wouldn't get any other bids. Well, that's exactly what happened. Her contractor took 5 weeks to come up with a bid of $298,000. Now, remember, I was at $159,000, and now she's got a bid for $298,000 that blows this project totally out of reality. It's not going to happen. She called me crying. She called me asking me if I even knew what I was doing. At that point, adding insult to injury, if she'd have just let me do my job, we would have been able to get those other bids. We would have had two or three bids coming in at the same time, and all would have been well, because her second bid, and she asked me to find your own contractor, find somebody that you've worked with before, and I said, No, you asked me a question that hurt me to the core. Do I know what I'm doing? So at this point, you find another contractor. I don't care if you use the telephone book. Ask your friends. Talk to your neighbors. Go around the neighborhood. If you see a contractor working on another project, invite them to bid on the project. But you pick the contractor. I want to stay arm's length at this one. Well, she actually looked at me and said, okay, I'll do that. And she did. She found another contractor, and only one. and he put his bid together. It took him about 3 weeks. He was a little faster than the other one, and he came in at $161,000. In reality, he came in at $171,000, but when I asked him how much contingency reserve he built into his bid, and believe it or not, contractors always build a percentage of contingency into their bid. When he told me that was $10,000, we deducted that from his bid, making his bid $161,000 plus contingency versus my bid of $159,000 plus contingency. And lo and behold, she realized that her contractor had got a strong feeling that there was nobody else bidding, and he came in at $298,000. So, you know, this is a very good bid. She asked me if we should actually try to talk this guy down to the $159,000. And I said, I don't think that's the best way to start a relationship with your contractor. He bid you a very good price. Well, it's been a very busy week on email questions from our consultant listeners, and we're going to get into those right after we take this short break. If you want to be part of the show, please call us at 888-627-6008, and we'll be right back. Hang in there.
.com. If you're having issues with your renovation project, we may be able to assist you. It's nice to know you have a knowledgeable person on your side. We recently had a client that had a lender telling them that the problem wasn't theirs, but it was the correspondent lender's. Ultimately, they agreed it was their problem and remedied the issue quickly. Most issues have been handled without a fee. Visit 203k911.com now and let's fix your problems.
Mike Gunn, welcome back. If you want to be part of the show, call us at 888-627-6008, toll free. We'd love to have your questions. It's been a very busy week, like I said, as we left the last segment with our consultant listeners. And we do have about 30 calls a week from consultants nationally that call us up and ask questions about consulting and so forth. One of them asked an interesting question the other day. How many draw inspections can you build into your 203K project? Well, that is an excellent question, by the way. And it's been a pet peeve of mine since about 2000, year 2000. Because from 1994 until 2000, you could have as many draws as you thought it might take to finish the job. Now, draw inspection, you know, typically we charge about $350 per draw plus mileage. So that can be a pretty good shot in the arm. And your choices are to build some into the loan so you don't have to come out of pocket for that money. And it'd be nice if you could build in exactly the right number so that you don't have any problems during the entire process. Short of that, if you do run short of money and you need more than one, more than five draws, which is the typical number. If you need more than that, then you merely do a change order and you take and just move some more money aside to pay for draw inspections. But up until 2000, we could put in the number of draws that we felt it would take. And most of the old time underwriters understood that. And they still do it. And they have never had a problem with it. But the younger underwriters, people who get their information directly from HUD in some cases, or misread the guideline in some cases, they're going to say, no, you can only have five draws. Well, this has been one of my pet peeves since about 2000. And in 2014, I received a call from my boss at HUD in Washington, D.C. And they were revising the guideline and preparing the 4000.1 handbook, which is the 203K guideline today. And I asked, would they please clarify that there can be more than five draws on a project? And the answer they provided actually shocked me. I was told there can only be five draws on a 203K. And I'm blown away. I mean, here it is. My boss in Washington, D.C. called me, and when I asked a simple question, informed me incorrectly of the guideline. I mean, this is totally blew me away. I was told there's only five draws allowed on a 203K. So I said, can you show me in the guideline where it states that? Well, it doesn't state that. So they couldn't, of course. And so I did. I provided that excerpt from the guideline and asked that they read it to me. I emailed it to them and I said, would you read this to me? And they scanned it and they said, oh, right there it is. No more than five draws are allowed when you do a 203K. So then I asked, when you went to school, did they always teach you to read starting in the middle of a sentence? And they said, well, of course not. I said, well, do me a favor and read that entire sentence starting at the beginning because you started in the middle. And they said, oh, okay. And I'm going to paraphrase this, but effectively what it said was, on a project of $10,000 in construction cost, no more than five draws are allowed. And they were set back. So if I have a project with $400,000 in constructions, I can most certainly have more than five draws. But, you know, since 2000, when somebody at HUD misread the guideline, started in the middle of that sentence, and demanded that that be law, that that be done, and got the word out all over the country to lenders. Lenders have been only allowing five draws. If you need more, you do a change order and you get the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th one. I did one that was 13 draws. It was $544,000 in construction cost. And it took 13 draws. Why couldn't I put 10 in the draw in the original paperwork? Luckily, this particular client was very well healed and didn't mind writing me a check for $500 every time I went out there to do a draw after the fifth one, because they are going to take more than five. With that, you know, having said that, many projects are going to take 6, 7, or 8 draw inspections, and to this day, some lenders will say, okay, we're going to mail a maximum of 6 draws on this job. And that's okay. But where did that come from? You know, we had one a while back that had a $300,000 project. They already had a contractor in line to do the renovation. But the contractor wanted them to agree up front to have 10 $30,000 draws built into the mortgage. And a contractor wasn't going to take this job on unless he got that commitment. And the lender wasn't going to allow that because they misread the guideline. Now, today, the guideline says you can have more than five draw inspections built into the loan, provided the lender and the homeowner agree that they're going to be needed. So it's not a problem. And the new guideline, it's a little easier to read. At least it doesn't say only five can be drawn. It just says whatever the lender and the homeowner agree upon. So I pointed that out to this lender. You know, hey, it's whatever you guys agree on. Here it is on the guideline. They know we're going by the original guideline, and that is no more than five draws. And I said, well, if you're going to go by the original guideline, then read the whole sentence. I could not convince them to do more than that. And the homeowner said, hell with this. I'm just going to go on and take care of this myself using my own money. I've got $300,000 in the bank. I just didn't want to use it. I like to keep it handy for my stores. so I can go buy stuff for my stores if I get in a bind. So he ended up doing it all by himself. He was not served by the loan. He was not served by the lender. Could not be served by me. And the lender didn't get a commission. The loan officer didn't get a paycheck. And why? It's because this lender was so sure of their misreading of the guideline that they imposed that on the client and me and so forth. They have their own in-house guideline. Now, understand that the guideline is just a guideline and that all lenders have the right to create supplemental guidelines under the program. So the supplemental program, you can't beat them. They're going to win every time, and maybe they should. So now, realtors. Let's get into this. That was the big question, by the way, from this week from consultants. But I want to get into what's in it for me. Realtors, well, as everybody, you know, what's in it for me? Why should I even learn about the 203K? Well, I'm going to tell you a little story or two about mixed-use buildings. When I was buying and selling real estate, and I bought and sold over 300 buildings, I would buy these little mixed-use buildings. I'd buy commercial buildings, whatever. I bought a lot of single-family houses and fourplexes and threeplexes. But I usually buy them as an investment to make money with them. I remember one duplex I bought had an extra lot that was already subdivided, and I was buying both. So I put the loan on the duplex, and I got the lot free and clear, turned around and sold it for as much as I paid for the duplex. So I ended up getting that one absolutely free. It took me about 30 days to get it sold and get the second lot sold. Anyway, so what we've got, realtors, what's in it for me? That's a good question. If you're into selling commercial or mixed-use buildings, there's a whole bunch in it for you. And if you're not, you need to be. Typically, a commercial building, you have to put 35% down. That's the going rate. Sometimes some banks want 40% down. They want to know you've got some skin in the game. But did you know using the FHA 203K and living in one of those rental units that you can buy that same building for 3.5% down? To me, that's amazing, especially if you're running a business and you need the commercial space below. You can buy or sell mixed-use buildings with only 3.5% down. What else can you do? You can create inventory when real estate inventory is very low. As we all know, right now, it's a seller's market. There's not enough properties out there, and the seller can pretty much ask anything and get it. Well, if you went and took properties that are hard to sell and turned them into houses using the 203K that people want to buy, I mean, if your client comes in and says, look, I can't afford a $650,000 home here in San Jose, California. But I see that little one bedroom, one bath over there is, I can buy it for $150,000, but it doesn't meet my needs. So sell it to them and add on to it using the FHA 203K. It seems like a simple solution to anyone who knows about the 203K. But give your client what he wants. In 3 or 4 years, he's going to sell it likely. And you guess what? You're going to list a house that's a much better house, much bigger house. So we can add bedrooms, bathrooms, change the footprint. We can add a story. We can add two stories. Whatever it is you need to do, we can make that house your house. And you've created inventory when there's no cost-effective inventory out there. And given your client effectively a mostly brand new house. So I think that's pretty cool. You're providing a better service to your clients by replacing bad roofs and updating bathrooms or kitchens. So if you've got a house that has a defect, use that. Get out there and sell it. It's got a low price on it, typically, because it's got defects. So tell the client, hey, you know what? We can do this. Kitchen sucks. It hasn't been updated in 35, 40 years. But if we put this under the 203K or home style and give you a brand new kitchen that you get to design, you know, you want to take that wall out and make this a great room and have a counter instead of a wall between the kitchen and the great room. All of these things are possible. Now, we're going to continue this discussion in just a few minutes. We're going to take a break right now. So please call in at 888-627-6008, toll free to be part of the show. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay tuned.
Thinking of becoming a 203K consultant? Contact us to see if you qualify. Home inspectors, contractors, architects, and engineers most likely qualify. Create an additional profit center using your existing knowledge base. For more information, visit 203ksoftware.com, and you'll be glad you did.
Hey, this is Mike Young. Welcome back. Again, call 888-627-6008, toll free to be part of the program. We were just talking about why realtors should know about the 203K and home style loans. 203K is for owner occupied properties only. The home style loan can be for investors. It can be second homes, or it can be owner occupied for that matter too. And then the VA renovation is for owner-occupied, of course. And VA Veterans Administration gives you 100% financing for vets. Now, I understand that CalVet has a renovation product too now. I have not looked into that yet. But CalVet, if you have a client and they have a lot of cash but very poor credit, you get them a CalVet loan. If they're a veteran ever in the military of the United States, and they're now moving into California or live in California, they qualify for CalVet loans. And the first time I bought a house and used my CalVet, I put 30% down unknowingly. I just had it to put down, so I put it down. And when I did that, I learned something about CalVet loans. With 30% down, they won't even check your credit, and they can close in a week, 10 days. So if you've got a client that's got a lot of money and poor credit and is CalVet qualified, bingo, you got it. So getting back to where we are, realtors need to know about the 203K. I love mixed-use properties. I've had several of them that we've worked on, but you know, you could easily have a store with one, two, or three more stories above it that are residential use. Now, there might be offices now, but you could turn it into residential use. Under this program, the FHA requires you, one, to live in that building somewhere, and it requires you to have commercial only on the ground floor. So if it's a single-story building, you got to have 51% residential. Well, if both floors are exactly the same size, which is quite common, then the staircase coming down from the upstairs to the downstairs is also counted as the residential, because that's how you access the residential, and thereby you gain that other percent quite easily. So you've got a store, you got one or two units downstairs. Originally, this was fine. And if you try to get your residential units up to par. You can renovate anything that has to do with the residential and the ceiling down below of the commercial that separates the residential from the commercial. Everything else has to be done. All the commercial is tenant improvement work and be paid by the tenant. But that gives you all the exterior, including the commercial, and all the interior of all the residents to be put under the renovation loan. Now, I had one client not too long ago. I stepped in after the fact and took over a project, and they actually figured a way to cheat the system a little bit and get the commercial done. It wasn't a pretty thing, and they certainly didn't like that I pointed out that they were committing fraud. Anyway, we have a two-story building. Second story is one big flat. That qualifies. You live in that unit, you got your store downstairs. You can rent the store out, but income from that store does not count or qualify to help you qualify for the loan. Now, you got a duplex or two units upstairs. Now, the income from those two units, both of them, times 0.7, and you had add that to your income and help you qualify for this loan. A triplex, again, the rent from all three units times 0.7, and you add that money to your total income and helps you qualify for the loan. So, and a fourplex, you take all four units, 0.7 or 70% of the income is counted as income you now make to help you qualify. So if you qualify for a single family house under the FHA loan program, which is the easiest to qualify for, then you have very likely that you can qualify for the commercial building as long as you're going to live in it. So if you're renting, if you got four units and they rent for $2,500 a piece, even though you're going to live in one, that's $10,000 a month. You get to count $7,000 a month towards your income. Okay. In fact, I got a note here. It says 75%, so it might be 75%. If any lenders are out there, you might call and tell us, let us know, correct us if we're wrong. The commercial portion of the building is not considered for income, but it is considered for building area. So when the appraiser comes out and the appraiser says, hey, I've got four units upstairs and they total maybe 7,500 feet, 2,500 each. Well, you also get to count the square footage of the commercial, even though you're not going to count it except for volume, building volume. And you would increase the size, and on your appraisal, you'd compare it to fourplexes that had that larger square footage. Now, why would you be interested in doing that? Well, one, it gets you a commercial mixed-use building sold for your client for 3.5% down. Now, with that kind of down payment, you can sell a lot of these versus a down payment of 35%. So this is a much, much greater advantage to you in the market. If you see a client comes in and says, I want to sell my mixed-use building, but there's just no market for it. Well, there is a market for it. I just drove down through Oakland yesterday. I was doing a couple of jobs here, and I drove down International Boulevard right around 90th, and they're working on International Boulevard. They're fixing the streets, and it's a mess. You can't hardly turn and get across. You have to go around the block and cross the street. There's no left turns in some of these areas. But what I noticed was gobs and gobs and gobs of mixed-use buildings that are sitting there boarded up, vacant, and have been for years. a enterprising realtor could go into there, find out who owns those buildings, and go make them offers. They haven't used them. They don't care about them. They're boarded up. They're not being used. One here and there has got a tenant in the bottom. Some of them have been broken into and are housing some homeless people. But they're not being rented out. That means whoever owns them doesn't care about them. Go make them an offer. Okay. We did one on International years ago at 87th Avenue and International Boulevard. And the street side was a storefront. There was an alley accessed behind and to the rear of the property that you could actually come in and park. I think he had room for four pickup trucks, and he put a fence out there on the alley, a gate with an automatic door opener. This is a licensed contractor. He moved in the apartment above the store. I think he actually moved into the third floor and rented out the second floor. And he was directly over his office where he made a display house, a display room, a place for his clients to come in and pick out their tile and their carpet and so forth. It was a perfect for this little contractor. He lived close by. He could keep his look out his back window and look at his pickup trucks in the back loaded with stuff for working on the next day or the next week. It was a very secure situation for him. I thought it was perfect for him. So these are the kind of things that you can do with the FHA 203K. And it was ideal for this contractor. Perfect situation. Okay. What are some of the other possibilities? Well, how about a commercial single story structure that's always vacant? You've noticed it. You drive by it every day on your way to work and on your way home. And you think, gosh, why in the world can't they rent that out? Well, the guideline was changed in 2014 to allow mixed-use buildings. So it used to be that you had to have on a single-story building, only 25% of that building could be commercial. Well, 75% then had to be residential. But with the 2014 guideline change, it's 49% is allowed to be commercial and 51% must be residential. So figure that one out. You can do that. That's good. And you can sell that for 3.5% down. So if your client is trying to buy his store or a place to sell his wares, that could be a viable solution for their problem. Another possibility is an old warehouse in a residential neighborhood where the residential properties have kind of grown in and around it, but you got this old brick facade and a corrugated roll-up door. It just looks ugly. That's what you see, but what I see is a live-work structure. A live-work structure. You come in, you put a new face on that brick, put some new windows in the front, leave the roll-up door, but put them a new roll-up door. Behind the roll-up door, a storefront door. Put in some glass doors and so forth. Let the residential have a different door on the other side of the room, on the other side of the front of the building. We did one like that on 38th Avenue in Oakland a few years back, and it just worked out well. I drove by it the other day just to show my spouse the way that we did that and what it looked like before, and the door was open. So I went over there. I was hoping to find any way to get a hold of the original buyer. And when I hit the door, it was open. I walked in, and the buyers looked up, and, oh, Mike Young, you're the one that helped us do this. So they're still there. It's still a viable live work for them. They've got the roll-up door. They drive their truck in with all their materials in it, park it, and close the door. They got a very secure building. It's just a darn good way to get some of these old buildings back into production. Okay, so hang in there with us. We're going to take another short break. Call in if you want to be part of the program. 888 727-6008. So we'll be right back after this short break.
We know which lenders are all talk and which ones can actually close your loans faster. You can depend on our consultants for the facts before you choose a lender. There are many lenders who will tell you they need 60 to 90 days to close a renovation loan. Those aren't the ones to choose. A 203K can close as fast as a 203B, unless the lender is trying to play all the possible positions on the field. The 203K is a team sport, and you should have the team members that know what to do. If your LO is constantly calling the consultant to see how is it going, you may want to reevaluate that member. Each member has a job. Let them perform their part while you perform yours. The countdown doesn't start until the lender gets your financial information. Visit 203k911.com. We know what to do.
This is Mike Young. We're back. If you want to be part of the show, just call in at 888-627-6008 and be part of the program. Well, we were talking about mixed-use buildings and live-work buildings. I mean, these warehouses that are down in the city's kind of grown in around it, residential has grown in around it, and you still see the warehouse there. They're very good for turning into live-work. Divide it. Turn it into four live-work. You got a fourplex. They're not that hard to appraise. If we had in the past, some of my experience is that I had a appraisal fee shop. So if any appraisers out there listing and want to know or ever need help in appraising something like this or need to know the guideline with regards to appraising mixed use or these properties, feel free to contact us. We're at 203konline.com. That's one of our websites, and you can look there, get our numbers off that sheet. We just put up a new website for our South Carolina office. It's my203kteamsouthcarolina.com. But we're all over the country, so if you need help, we can help you anywhere in the United States and outlying colonies, okay? So what happens when I start telling people, rather, about the possibilities, inevitably somebody will point out to me that there are no mixed-use buildings in our area. That's a dumb statement, frankly. They're all around you. What it is you don't recognize them as mixed-use buildings. So realtors, open your eyes. They aren't noticeable, but if they do exist, and they exist in every city, in every state in the union, but frankly, you don't see them. You drive downtown and you see that storefront, and what do you see above it? You don't see that, but there's apartments above it. All through San Francisco, these are all over the place, Oakland, any city in the United States, all through Los Angeles. We did a nice mixed-use conversion in L.A. not too long ago, L.A. being Los Angeles, not Louisiana. So, but the nice thing about it is that you qualify a client to purchase that with 3.5% down payment. That's a big deal. Everyone else is trying to find a loan for 60 to 65% LTV, loan to value. And you're selling these same structures for 3.5% down or 96.5% financing, guaranteed by HUD, guaranteed by the FHA. right? You will soon be the king or queen of the commercial mixed-use property sales in your marketing area. You can have one residential, two, three, four above a store, and your client needs to live in one of those units. I think last week we talked about that one on 3rd Street in San Francisco that the guy inherited the store and three levels of residential above it in San Francisco. And he inherited it 25, 30 years earlier and never finished the residential. I mean, it had been finished and then it had been gutted. The store was the only thing he was using. He didn't care about the residential, and he heard about the 203K loan program. So he called and we went out to talk to him. And when I figured that out at that time, at those rents, and the rents have at least doubled. So today, if he still got that building, he is making a ton of money. But when we were there, I think it was one rental unit paid the mortgage payment on his entire building. He had four rental units. One was a studio where he chose to live. He says, I'm a very simple man. I don't have big needs. And so we put in two four-bedroom flats and then a three-bedroom at the very top and a studio. And he wanted to live in that studio. And he wanted to be in the front corner so he could look down the street in two different directions. So we put a bump out there for him to be able to do that. It was perfect for him. And when, if you heard me talking about him before, the guy went to tears. He started crying, sobbing like a little baby with joy when I showed him how he was going to be able to make about $7,500 a month on those things over and above his mortgage payment. And he just sobbed and said, I never thought I would be able to retire in my entire life. But my cousin's been wanting to run the store and own the store, so I'm going to sell him the store now. And I will be here and be able to watch the store for him when he goes out to shop for things for the store. And it'll be good for him, it'll be good for me, and keep me active. And I have enough money to live on. And it's just, there's so many possibilities. You need to look at them. You can have mixed-use buildings typically have values according to their location. Surprise. All comes back to the three most important things in sales of real estate. Location, location, location. Boy, I haven't heard that in years. Commercial mixed-use buildings are no different. HUD has maximum loan amounts for each county in each state. So you're going to have to get on the HUD website. Just search for FHA maximum mortgage amounts per county or per state, and that'll pop right up. If you have any problem with it, send me an email. I'll be happy to find it and send it to you. It's very, very easy to find. But to give you an idea, if you have a mixed-use building and you have four residential units, you're going to be able to get a loan of $1.25 million. That's $1,250,000 for that mixed-use building. That's the loan amount. Add 3.5% to that, and that would be the purchase price with the construction. I would venture to guess that right now in San Francisco, you could probably buy a mixed-use building with residential above somewhere in the $600,000 to $700,000 range of an old commercial building that's got nothing downstairs. It's not rented. Okay. So this could be a real cash cow. Okay. I know of one city in California right now that has dozens of vacant mixed-use buildings. They wanted me to buy them, but I'm not doing that anymore. They're waiting for someone to see the gold. They are golden. They are absolutely golden. So I see we're running up against a hard break here, the end of the day. So I think I'll get started on this. If we don't finish it, we'll pick it up from here next time. Next time, see us next Sunday, 1 to 2 p.m. We'll be happy to answer your questions. If you're too shy to get on the radio with me, then feel free to send those emails in. Go to my203kconsultant.com, click on the radio, and there's a link there to leave us messages, send us emails, tell us what you'd like to talk about. And we'll be happy to do that. So look forward to seeing you next week, and we'll sign out for today.
Tune in every Sunday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time to BBS Radio Station 1 and learn more about making home renovations possible, profitable, and hassle-free. Isn't it time you learned how to make money doing something you loved? Visit 203konline.com now and let's get your home makeover projects done right.